Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Buddhist Voices with me, Chandradasa, on the Buddhist Centre online. As usual, you can find us on SoundCloud, on Audioboom, on iTunes. You get all of those links from the front page of thebuddhistcentre.com. And I'm absolutely delighted to be here today with my guest, Kalyana Prabha. Now, Kalyana Prabha is one of the editors, the literary editors for Sangharakshita, Urgyen Sangharakshita, who's the founder of the Charitana Buddhist Community. And we're here in a rather beautiful room at Adistana in Herefordshire, where Sangharakshita lives. And we're looking out on the glorious fields of Herefordshire. And we're going to have a conversation about, well, words of meaning. So welcome.
Thank you, Chandradasa. Very pleased to be here.
I'm very glad we could finally meet and have this conversation. So there's a couple of reasons that we wanted to talk of both specific and very general importance, I think. One is you've just finished a new book, which,
Yes.
and this is your chance to plug away shamelessly
Yes,
to the
I've just
world.
seen it this morning. It's just arrived.
With the cover
With the
and,
cover, yes,
oh, how
certainly with the cover.
exciting.
Yeah,
And your introduction.
yes, with the introduction, yeah,
Gosh,
and all the
and
notes.
all the fruit of that work just appearing. And that's also part of a much larger project, which is coming into focus right now, which is
Yes,
Sangharakshita's Complete Works.
that's right, yes.
So let's start with this new book. What was the basic premise of another book by Sangharakshita? Where did you even find the material to do another book?
Yes. Well, I was working on a book called Early Writings, Bhante's Early Writings, 1944 to 1954, which we launched this time last year, actually. And I thought, that's it now. I've done four books with Bhante, that's Sangharakshita, and I don't think there'll be any further material to publish. But a few weeks after we launched that, he wrote to me and said he'd got the idea for another one. Was I interested? And of course, I said I was. And what he wanted to do was gather together all the material that hasn't appeared in book form that he wrote during his period of living in Moseley. And Moseley is where Madi Maloka, which was the headquarters for our movement, spiritual headquarters, let's say. I think he saw it that way. Well, he lived there for 16 years. And he wrote a lot during that time, quite a bit of which is out in books like Living Ethically, Living Wisely, and Moving Against the Stream, many things. But there was quite a lot of material that actually never was published as a book. So the title of this new book is A Moseley Miscellany. And then the subtitle is Prose and Verse, 1997 to 2012. And the title is Sangharakshita Bhante's own title. He decided on it. A miscellany is not a very common word in modern English, but it was used quite a lot in the 18th century, and it means a collection of writings of different kinds. All sorts of different writings could be there. I think even they used to put recipes in the medieval times in a miscellany, for instance. The book is divided into nine sections. Three involve poetry. One is an apology. One is a tribute to Ayakema. So I'm not going to say more about any of those just now. The three larger sections are a mosaic of memories, which is Bhante recalling his very early memories from when he was less than 8 years old. Very vividly told, going back into a child's mind, what it was like to live in the London of the 1920s and 30s. Outings and pantomime and his grandmother and accidents, such like. And a large section, probably the largest section, is his reveries and reminiscences, which I think show the depth and breadth of Bhante and his mind. It's almost like when I read them, like sitting opposite him, a bit like I'm sitting opposite you now, and he starts talking, with an idea or a memory or something he's seen, and gradually it unfolds and unfolds, and more memories emerge, and then he's commenting on what he's recalling. It might be something more general, like there's the blowing up of the Bamiyan Buddhas, brings about a whole conversation about vandalism and what he calls principled vandalism. And then he turns it, and at the end, he's talking about shunyata and the awakening of faith in the Mahayana. So that gives you the sort of area he goes into. And also in those reminiscences, he recalls some very, very personal experiences, including his very, very difficult time in the year 2002-03. And that one is called A Season in Hell. But not only does he describe what he suffered at that time through insomnia, but also some very, very extraordinary dreams and visions that he had.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because someone like Sangharakshita, who lives at least partly in the public eye and has a very well-established public output, there are certain stories you'll hear over and over again. If you read his books, if you listen to his talks, and also his disciples have carried those stories forward because they encapsulate very well aspects of his approach to the Dharma. But in this kind of context, where you see something else, it's almost somebody lifts the veil.
Yes.
And you get not so much. Well, certainly the stuff that isn't being produced for public output.
Yes. I think Bhante himself, or my impression is, he just has tried to communicate in whatever circumstances he found himself, the Dharma. But in this situation, he's more expressing his own inner experience. And yes, I think that's part of what you get in the Mosley Miscellany. You're allowed to go into, so you're invited into his own room. What he was thinking, reflecting, as he sat for many, many hours in that room where many people have gone and visited him, actually.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah. A lot of people who visited him go into his room, and there's a particular experience. So it's quite an intimate book, in a way.
In that sense, it is. Yeah. I think it helps us come nearer to the man. Who is he, Sangharakshita? Who has he been this last decade or more? So basically, anything can go. And what we've got in this miscellany is, of course, prose and verse. And in the prose, we've got everything from reminiscences and memories. And in a way, you've got an old man sitting back and recalling his life. Everything mapped to the poems we've mentioned and some quite stringent book reviews. Well, particularly, there's an interesting one on Stephen Batchelor's Buddhism Without Beliefs.
I was going to say infamous review.
Yes. Well, actually, when you really look at it, he has a lot to agree with in Batchelor, and he is appreciative of him. He's warmly appreciative of a person whom he calls a respected fellow Buddhist. But as we know with Bhante, he doesn't hesitate to speak his, he calls it disapproval, actually, of some of Batchelor's ideas and views. And he shows, with this exceptionally sort of analytical aspect that he has to his own intellect, the inconsistencies in Batchelor's own standpoint. Actually, it doesn't quite stand up. He ends up showing that Batchelor actually is being the very thing that he purports not to be.
I was quite taken with you a bit about miscellany there, because the thing that it reminds me of is Walter de la Mare, who was a famous miscellanist. Something like Come Hither, where you get this beautiful kind of gathering together of all these little coloured odds and ends of literature.
Yes.
Some major things, but also lots of recipes and footnotes and local dialect versions of rhymes and things like that.
Exactly,
and Bhante does have a certain quality, doesn't he, where he's not necessarily attempting to be different from his time, but he's carrying forward a set of values in literature that are probably a little bit out of fashion. Do you think that's fair to say?
Which sort of values were you thinking?
He's not interested, for instance, in something that is superficial and attempting to be current.
No, that's true.
He's not in that sort of mood when he's expressing himself. There's something else that's almost a different pace of thought.
Yes, I mean,
very thorough.
He's very thorough. And I find that an interesting topic because, you know, some people might say, well, his style is old-fashioned. Or some people might say, well, certain styles lend themselves more easily to the communication of a depth of thought than others. And I don't know, that would be an interesting discussion to have more widely, really.
Yeah. It strikes me that Sangharakshita is a bit like a literary phenomenon all his own. He's so much output. He's 90 years old. That's the overarching context just now. And here he is in the very late stages of his life and he's still producing.
Yes, it is quite remarkable. I was surprised how much material came together. I think he was surprised too as he turned his mind to what he had written during that time. There was quite a bit more than he'd thought himself, including quite a few poems. I think at various stages of his life he's thought, or at least in the latter part of his life, more recently, he's thought he wouldn't write any more poems. And then poems have seemed to come to him again in a period between 1999 and 2003. That was one period. And then they seemed to stop again. And then as late as 2009, he started writing poetry again. So all these poems are in the new book.
Now, we'll come to the kind of whole span of his literary career in a bit. But when did he start writing?
At all in his life.
Just to give people a sense of context with this, because here we are, 2015.
Well, I've no idea when he literally first wrote his first piece.
No, sure.
I know one of his very early things he wrote was A Life of the Buddha, in fact. He mentions that in his memoirs. Probably he might have been 9, 10, 11 or something. I know when his first article was ever published, which is very interesting. That appears in the early writings. And he wrote it when he was 18 years old. He'd only discovered the Dharma maybe 18 months before. And this article is called The Unity of Buddhism. And it speaks with an authority and a vision that is quite extraordinary. You think, how is this possible for someone of 18 who's only just met the Dharma?
And this is 1943, so he's
yes,
very young.
Yes, it was published in 1944, I think it was actually published, yeah.
And it's not particularly precocious, actually, is it? It's not a young man's writing.
No, I mean, sometimes he almost sounds like a biblical prophet in that particular one. And
he'd like that, wouldn't he?
Maybe he would. Maybe he would. And also, this is something I've become conscious of working on his writings over this last period, this sort of intense longing to communicate the Dharma. It's almost like the hallmark of his life, I think, to sort of communicate the Dharma in whatever way he can. And he combines this sort of very, very rare combination of depth of insight into the Buddha's teaching and the Dharma. And you know, an outstanding intellect and artistic sensibility. So he uses all of that, it seems to me, to communicate.
And here we are all these years later, he's producing more material. I suppose it comes to mind, what is it, do you think, that keeps him writing? You know, wanting to express in that particular medium? Because, as you say, he could just sit back on a long career of teaching and exposition.
Yes.
And yet something keeps him going.
Well, I think basically he's a tremendously creative individual. So in a way he can't stop. He needs creative output. So I think whenever he gets the chance, and in latter days he's needed some of his friends and disciples to help give him a way of being able to continue to express that creativity. Yeah.
And are there pieces in this new collection that were hitherto private?
Well, some of the poems have never appeared before at all.
Ah.
Yeah.
So this isn't just a sort of assemblage of things from magazines or websites? Or
no, not only. A lot of it has appeared on the website or in Shabda, the order newsletter, but there are some that haven't appeared at all or have been in very obscure places.
Well, in a way, it takes us into this wider project, doesn't it? Because we worked together on a video recently where you were speaking very beautifully about your own connection with Sangharakshita as your teacher, but also I think as someone who just seems to share your love of words in a way that seems important to you as a listener. Like I can see there's a connection on the level of words that is definitely not superficial.
Yes.
Let's just say that. Definitely not. Full of meaning, rich.
True.
A rich ground of connection. I suppose it is a question for people. Sangharakshita is not necessarily a widely read author, although I think he is a deeply read author. He's a well-established figure in the Western Buddhist world and indeed some parts of the Eastern Buddhist world. You've given a lot of your time and energy to helping shape his legacy, and in a way, as one of his literary executors, you're going to help carry that forward beyond his life. I'd be interested to hear a bit about what it is you connect with, particularly in terms of this issue of his particular style and his particular approach to literature, lending itself to a sort of depth exploration of something. Does that make sense as a question?
It makes sense, although I think of Bhante's output as much more than literature. It includes literature, depending, of course, on one's definition of literature.
I think I'm thinking everything from scripture to, you know,
doggerel. Oh, okay. Yes, I suppose you're saying, well, what moves me to want to do this?
What moves you to want to do it, and how far back does it go with you?
Far back in my life, do you
know? How far back? That sense of words as a way into reality, words as a way into experience. Because it clearly goes all the way back through his life, this thread of a 9-year-old boy all the way through to a 90-year-old man.
Yes. Well, my own life is a very much smaller affair, let's say. And, well, I enjoyed reading, that's for sure. Could read when I was quite little. But I wasn't widely read. I wish I was, but I wasn't. And I'm still not really very widely read. But probably I was somebody who looked for depth in things and found it in literature. Yeah, particularly in literature. I used to love D.H. Lawrence, for instance, was a great love when I was young. Still, I enjoy his. I'd sort of find a person that spoke to me and then I'd focus on that. And actually, when I started to learn German, and then Goethe also became a great love, his poetry. So I say it in a sort of minor way. I could resonate to something of Bhante in that sense. This love of words is pointing to something and the capacity of words to bear meaning. And among those who are very, very skilled, they can combine words to make images that can convey, you know, many meanings in a sense.
Elizabeth Bishop, the American poet, she has something to say about this, I think, where she's not particularly interested in the connection between biography and literary output. But she does have this advice. She says, if you find somebody you love, you just use the word love about Goethe or Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah.
she says, read everything by them. Read yeah. their letters, read their notes,
yeah,
read,
that's right.
read their juvenilia, read everything.
Yes.
And it's quite interesting to do that as a reader, but actually as an editor, presumably that's a slightly different experience because you're helping to...
Yes. Well, Vidya Devi, my co-editor, she's the person who really has read everything of Bhante's because she prepared the Essential Sangharakshita, which is a tremendous resource, actually.
Mm.
I haven't yet read everything of Bhante's, but I will be doing so, I presume, in the course of this project. At the moment, what we've been doing is trying to shape this whole tremendous corpus into groupings. So for the readers of the future, they can go to this, what will be the complete works, and look at a certain volume and know that in this volume, certain things are collected together.
Mm.
For instance, we've just been discussing having a volume on Going for Refuge. It'll be called the Going for Refuge volume, and various articles or lectures will be in that. So you can sort of see what Bhante had to say on that particular topic.
Mm. As this thinking develops... through the years.
It would be, or it might be more like a mandala, seeing it from different sides.
Yeah.
I think this particular collection may not have that particular, or the way we've put it together isn't chronological.
Mm.
So it won't be you start off with the first things he wrote and reach the end by the last volume and see the movement of his thought. The scholars of the future who want to do that will have to do a little bit more sort of looking around through the whole set.
You put them inside the kaleidoscope. Right in the middle of it.
More like that, yes.
So this sense of your connection with it again, that came across very strongly when I saw you speak about this before. Maybe you give us a sense of the sort of resonances for you in taking on a person's life work in that way, because presumably it can't help but be a very personal element.
Yes, I think I'm still taking in that I've done that. I'm sort of aware on one level it's going to be the next 5 or 10 years I'll be doing this, and I shall be growing old with it, I suppose. But it boils down to my sense of Bhante's significance, which is very, very strong indeed. I suppose it goes back to when I was young and the sense of what extreme confusion I felt about the meaning of life, etc. How did one live and all that sort of thing, which certainly as a young, well, a teenager and young adult, I felt that very keenly. And the loss of my religion that I was brought up in and the rest of it.
Mm.
And coming across the Dharma, which was, well, a beacon in a dark world, you could say. And yes, I would like that to be available to as many people as possible. And to me, Bhante's own particular way of communicating the Dharma has been very meaningful.
Hmm.
It's interesting because many of the modern Western teachers that I've noticed, they don't combine this capacity for conceptual and symbolic representation of the Dharma.
Right.
Some of them are very conceptual. When I say conceptual, it's ideas after ideas. It might be quite simple. It's not complicated, but there's not much speaking to you with this sort of archetypal force which comes through from Bhante. So that's one aspect of his teaching I appreciate a lot.
And when you first came across Bhante as a teacher, was it his spoken word that you encountered first, or was it the written word? What was it that struck you about his words?
Well, I encountered his disciples. I encountered Ratnaguna and Subhadra.
Uh-huh.
This was in the early 80s. They were, in a way, giving Bhante's teaching. I think in those days, I remember Ratnaguna was so careful to sort of just pass on what he'd heard. That was my impression. They also passed on their inspiration, which they had from Bhante, both. And personally, what I first heard was a teaching on Buddhist ethics. And it sent me home feeling like my mind was on fire.
Mm. There's something about when you encounter a teacher's words, whether they're spoken words or whether they're written words.
Mm.
It strikes me that a lot of people who've engaged with Buddhism, at least on some level, may have heard things like Buddhism goes beyond words and concepts.
Mm.
And yet, what we have to engage with somebody is largely what they produce, in the case of a teacher.
Mm.
And this kind of great vision of this complete works that's going to carry Sangharakshita's particular translation of the Dharma for generations. It is built around words. It's not 10 volumes of silence.
That's the last volume.
That's the last volume. It's the giant blank tome.
That's right.
That'd be fantastic if you did that. Bemuse the future.
That's right. I think I understand what you're saying. It reminds me a little bit of something Bhante quotes about you have to have a self before you can go beyond self.
Mm.
So perhaps there have to be words before you can go beyond words. And probably not many people would be capable of just sitting in silence and receiving the teachings.
Mm. Yeah. There's also connection, of course, isn't there? Because it's very hard. One could talk about reality all day, but it's abstract. Mm. There's something about personal connection. I certainly remember any reading I did when I was younger.
Mm.
I remember always being awestruck that this person who didn't even know I exist had written something.
Yes.
And it had such a strong effect on me.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah, everything from, you know, Narnia to, you know, Peter Pan or whatever it was as a kid. And that sort of quality of connection, you feel connected to another consciousness almost.
Oh, that's a really good point, yeah.
It bridges so much.
That's true. And I suppose the great writers have the capacity to sort of reach that common humanity.
Mm.
Yeah. I think Banti's got a poem on this, actually. You know, the poet speaks what the ordinary man can only feel. The great literary person can find the words to express experience so that you feel your own experiences recognised. And yes, with a spiritual teacher, they recognise your experience and point to you something beyond it.
Mm. I've heard some people talk about Sangharakshita's complete works, and they're looking at it through the lens of literary quality. So they're comparing Sangharakshita's prose style, for example, to whoever, you know, Lawrence or Hemingway or whoever it is you happen to, to love, or his poetry style.
Yes.
And it's always struck me with Sangharakshita that on the one hand, he loves literature and he definitely relates to the act of writing as a way into spiritual life. I've heard him talk about it as an entrance to spiritual life. On the other hand, he doesn't necessarily take himself too seriously sometimes. I heard him say a lovely thing where he described himself as somebody had critiqued his poetry and he smiled and said, "I'm a belated minor Neo-Georgian."
Yes.
And
yes,
it's interesting, isn't it, to work on a complete works which usually is reserved for great writers and great literary figures.
Right.
And he's slightly enigmatic, Sangharakshita, because he's a great thinker.
Right.
And he's written a lot, and sometimes he's written very well about a lot of things.
Yes.
But he's not primarily, I think, to be seen through a literary lens, is he?
Exactly. To my mind, Sangharakshita is primarily a teacher of the Dharma. That's really what he is. And he's used his ability to express things in words for that end. But I think, in a sense, it all comes back to that in the end. He wants to communicate the Dharma.
And presumably the Mosley miscellany material is amongst the latest material that's going to go into his complete works.
Yes.
Is there more coming?
Well, Bhante's still producing poetry. He's written some since he got here to Adishtana, so we couldn't include it because it's not written in Mosley.
Will it be in the complete works?
I suppose it will. Yes, it will.
So the trail leads back to the teacher, doesn't it? He's there.
Yes.
He's just giving expression to something.
Yes, yes. Mm.
If you were to put your finger, and this is probably an unfair question, but if you were to put your finger on a quality or two of Bhante's writing, what do you think it would be? What does it evoke?
That's quite a question, yeah. I think I'd have to think about it more. I mean, a word that comes to mind is vividness. I find his writing very vivid. And there's something about truthfulness also that comes through to me.
Oddly enough, I was thinking about it. Certainly his poems, whatever one thinks of his poems as poetry, there's always a certain sort of joy.
Yes.
And the fact that he's still producing them as a very old man, when he really doesn't have to anymore, if he doesn't want to, it's like a bubbling up.
That's true, yeah. I mean, some of them, he says, just came to him whole. They just come to him.
And they're not always very straightforward. There's a very interesting poem about somebody murdering somebody, if I remember rightly.
There's a poem of someone lying. That's right, the Revenge. Is that the one you're thinking?
It might be. I can remember the slight surprise of hearing him read it, thinking, okay.
I think Bhante's very surprising in his poetry. He writes about all sorts of themes. He's not at all politically correct. There's a few.
He definitely is not politically correct.
There's a few in the Mosley Miscellany, that's, including one little, I think it's an epigram, which will raise some eyebrows, I know.
Now, that's interesting, because you're in an interesting position. Particularly, you know, Sangharakshita is old, but he will die at some point. And you're in an interesting position in that you get to make decisions about what does and does not go forward into the public domain. Have you ever come across anything where you've thought, there's an editorial hand needed here? Or have you got a very kind of light touch, as it were?
On the latter. I tend to not want to change things much at all. And I'm not averse to a little controversy myself, so I don't mind when Bhante, in fact, I quite appreciate some of his more provocative statements, even if I don't always agree with everything he says, but I appreciate his willingness to speak up and speak out against the tide, including sometimes, you know, the tide in our own movement.
Mm. I think that's one of the qualities that's good that I was thinking of earlier about this. He's not necessarily a slave to kind of current trends. He's prepared to be his own man.
Definitely, yeah. I think that's, I mean, that stands out as a characteristic of his throughout his life. I think it's clear who he is and what he thinks and believes.
Hmm. But not completely inflexible either. He does.
Oh, no.
I heard somebody recently had an interesting conversation with him, and he said at the end something like, oh, well, you have to learn new things even at 90 or something like that.
Yes, that's true. I didn't mean to imply he's inflexible, not in any way. And working with him, he's very open to ideas. So he has an idea and you suggest something, he'll very willingly adopt it if he thinks it's a good idea. He's a very easy person to work with. He's very respectful of another person's creative process, I notice.
And he does like to embrace media, etc., new media. Pleasure working with him. And you're right, if you demonstrate that you are engaged with him and what he's doing, there is quite a lot of, I like to call it wiggle room with Sanger Extra.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
There's always some movement somewhere. So you're coming up on quite a big time. You're going to launch this new book, and then the world gets a bit of an awakening around the whole project of the complete works. A lot of money has been raised.
Yes.
There's a big sort of birthday party for Sanger Extra's 90th birthday here. What's the landscape like for you after that? Is it a much more solitary sort of pursuit as an editor?
Well, it's not solitary, actually, because I'm working with Vidya Devi, who lives the other side of the Malvern Hills. I live one side and she lives the other side. And so we are in good touch about the work. And also Priyananda, the director of Windhorse Publications, also. So the three of us are working quite closely together. And there's Shantavira, our sub-editor in Birmingham, and Ruth Rudd in Norwich, who will be working on it as well. So I'm part of a team.
So it feels like a team.
It's a very good team. We've got a very good team. But still, a lot of the hours will be at my computer, working away, working on the text, maybe adding a few notes. We need new prefaces for each volume.
And what are the satisfactions of that kind of work, that sort of editorial work? Because, you know, a lot of people listening to this may not know either Buddhism or Charan or even Sanger Extra, but they will know their own reading. So what's the editor?
Yeah, well, if I'm really honest, I don't especially like the very humdrum stuff, but it has to be done. So there one has to have a bigger sort of sense of what one's doing it for. Probably for me, the most enjoyable is working on new material, writing notes, and trying to get some sort of, well, often when I'm working on these sorts of works, I get getting new understandings. In a way, I'm getting Bante's own vision of life is sort of informing my own. And that, of course, is the most satisfying of all.
And that's an ongoing formation, isn't it? And sort of training. Well, I'm very much looking forward to hearing what you've got to say when you launch the Mosley Miscellany, when you've finished. I know you're still writing that little talk. I'm very happy to know there's such a strong team involved who are going to take this forward. And, well, we'll see what emerges.
See what emerges.
Online and in the world as you know, beautiful books emerge from this.
I must say that Mosley Miscellany was designed by Damarati, and it is a very striking cover.
Can you describe the cover?
Well, here's a little hint. There's a picture of Bante. There are two Afghani stamps with the Bamiyan Buddhas on. There's a little picture of the Egyptian god Thoth. There's William Blake, and there's a blackbird. And there's a picture of Bante as a boy. And those pictures, Damarati has brilliantly managed to sort of draw them all together, and they give us a clue as to what's in the miscellany.
That sounds rather fab. Well, congratulations on the new book and on the complete works. Such a noble endeavour. And thanks for a lovely conversation today.
Oh, thank you, Chandradasa.
We'll see you again for some more Buddhist voices in the forthcoming weeks and months. Check us out on the Buddhist Centre online and all the sources that you see there, SoundCloud, Audioboom and iTunes. And we'll see you again very soon.